Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please.
Good morning. Sorry.
Case number 051097 et al., State of New Jersey et al., petitioners versus Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Hughes, State Environmental Petitioners, Mr. Hotlever, responding EPA, Mr. Boykin with the Industry Review.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jim Pugh. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'm representing today the state and environmental petitioners and presenting argument on EPA's removal of coal and oil-fired power plants from the list of source categories for which Clean Air Act Section 112 requires protective air toxic standards. Because EPA did not make the specific showings on risk to human health and the environment that Clean Air Act Section 112C9 requires as a precondition to delisting any source category, the agency's delisting of power plants was unlawful. EPA does not dispute that given its literal meaning, Clean Air Act Section 112C9 precludes it from delisting any source category, including power plants, without first making the Section 112C9 showings. To avoid this literal meaning at Chevron Step 1, it is up to EPA to show either that as a matter of historical fact, Congress did not mean what Section 112C9 says, or that as a matter of logic and statutory structure, it almost certainly could not have meant it. EPA doesn't even attempt to make these showings. Instead, it just asserts that because Section 112N required it to make an initial determination about whether regulating power plants under Section 112 was appropriate and necessary before it listed power plants, Section 112N necessarily also authorizes it to delist power plants by just reversing that determination. But there is not a word in Section 112N or Section 112C9 to support that claim. Section 112N does not authorize delisting or even speak to delisting. All it does is provide the criteria that EPA must use to decide whether to regulate power plants under Section 112, and if those criteria are met, it requires EPA to regulate under Section 112.
Suppose the N1A report or study or the 112C listing were clearly flawed, that everybody agreed it was wrong, that they had relied on a false study or something, that everybody agreed it was completely wrong. Is there no way for EPA to remove the listing without going through C9?
No, Your Honor. Section 112C9 is very clear. The only condition for C9 to apply is whether the category is on the list. It literally says that it authorizes EPA to take a category off the list.
So even if EPA has to issue emission standards that it knows are legally flawed because of some error, preceding error, they still have to go ahead with it?
Well, I don't think it would require EPA to issue legally flawed standards for two reasons. First, if EPA shows under Section 112C9 that the category should be delisted, it can delist.
That doesn't really answer my question.
There's also an opportunity for industry at the end of this process to challenge the listing criteria, the listing decision itself, in a challenge to the final standards. But I suppose that the direct answer to your question is...
The answer is no, right?
EPA cannot take the category off the list once it's on there.
So the process would be that the agency would, as you understand the statute, promulgate standards under 112 and then stay the effective date of those standards for a court challenge to proceed, and that court challenge would embrace not only the standards but the administrator's original determination.
EPA could conceivably stay the standards during the pendency of the challenge, but here it's important to note that EPA has already taken comment on the listing decision.
No, but I'm just following through on Judge Tatel's line of questioning here, that in my hypothetical, they could have stayed the effective date of any standards if they had promulgated them under Section 112, and then the court challenge could have proceeded?
Well,
is that your understanding of the statutory scheme?
Let me start at the beginning of this process. If there would be an additional opportunity for comment when the standards were proposed, and once those standards were issued and an outside party challenged them, to argue that the initial listing was in error.
No, but what I'm trying to get at is whether or not the statutory scheme embraces a procedure whereby, under Judge Tatel's hypothetical, even after the comments, the standards are viewed at least by one sector that's directly affected as flawed. And if the agency has some concern about the validity of the original determination, is that, as your understanding of the statutory scheme, a way to get at the concern that the agency has expressed now?
Well, I don't know that EPA has authority to stay the standards beyond the statutory deadlines. Mm-hmm. I think this court could stay the standards, but also the statutory deadlines themselves allow 3 years after the date of promulgation for existing sources to comply.
Well, if, as you say, a party that's aggrieved by the initial finding could challenge it when the standards were promulgated, why can't EPA just reverse its decision?
Congress could have set it up that way, Your Honor, but it chose to instead set it up so that EPA can only take a category off the list if it makes the Section 112C9 findings. That's the literal meaning of the statute, and EPA does not dispute it. Clearly, Congress knew how to create systems where EPA could correct what it perceived as errors. In fact, Section 110K6 contains just that kind of provision, where EPA believes that it erred in approving a SIP or a SIP revision. But Congress didn't put that kind of provision into this statute. In fact, another sort of aspect of this I think is worth emphasizing is that if EPA could simply reverse its decision whenever it claimed that its original listing decision was an error, Section 112C9 would be a dead letter. And the agency could always get around the Section 112C9 listings by just claiming it had made a mistake in the original listing decision.
So is this, I take it this then, this is also your answer to the argument that I noticed in the state and industry intervener's brief that the N1A study should have been published for comment, right?
Well,
your answer is the same there, right? Even if the emission standards that the agency ultimately issues are defective because the N1A study was not published, they still have to go forward with the emission standards and then they'd be struck down then, right?
I think that's the answer, is yes. If there are any errors in the substance of the rule, mm-hmm. Congress wanted those to be addressed in a challenge to the final standards, including the listing.
Is there any indication as to why Congress set it up this way?
I think there is. Mm-hmm. The legislative history, which is summarized in the National Lime case, talks about Congress' frustration with EPA's decades of inaction and delay in regulating power plants, or not power plants, but all hazardous air pollutants in the period leading up to the 1990 amendments. And this is a part of, this is one of several provisions that is, I think, intended to address that problem. One is the very strict deadlines that are set out in Section 112E1 and C5. Another is Section 112E4, which protects listing decisions from judicial review until the final standards are issued, and therefore prevents outside parties from slowing up the regulatory, mm-hmm. the standard-setting process. And I think it's consistent with that to put Section 112C9 in the Act to stop EPA itself from slowing up the standard-setting process by taking plants on and off the list.
Well, is it relevant at all that Congress also required a number of procedures to be followed before the administrator would make this initial determination under N1?
Congress did set up a special precondition for regulating power plants in the first place. It's different than the other entry points into Section 112 regulation that apply to all other source categories. But I would say that the structure for power plants is the same as the structure for every other category. Section 112 contains a precondition for regulation that EPA makes this appropriate and necessary determination, and then it contains a mandate. EPA
In other words, what I was getting at is arguably Congress's scheme was both a product of frustration, but not a rational frustration in the sense that it limited the opportunity to challenge the administrator's determination, but required that the administrator's determination be a deliberate and considered one after study that the statute called for generally by the National Science Foundation, as well as this other study as was required under N1, so that this is not a casual or unconsidered decision.
No, Your Honor, I don't think either Congress intended an unconsidered decision, and I don't think EPA made an unconsidered decision.
But just pressing the point, suppose all that were true in my hypothetical, and nevertheless, between December 2000 and now, the world has changed, and mercury is no longer a problem, arguably, or not to the extent that the administrator originally thought it was. C9 is a very strong statement by Congress, isn't it? I mean, no source within the category. And is the respite simply that only those sources that are continuing to be in violation would continue to be regulated?
If I understand the mm-hmm. hypo correctly, there would be developments after a listing that made mm-hmm. clear that the listed category wasn't really a problem, but they wouldn't be enough to get the category through Section 112C9. I think this is a situation where Congress did act to prescribe very strong medicine, and it intended that category to stay on the list until such time as certainly stay on the list unless it was shown to be wrong on judicial review of the final standards. But it did.
All right, but the category stays on the list. But suppose I own four different facilities, and three of them are in conformity with these 112 standards that the administrators promulgated, but one is not. It's only the one that remains regulated, right?
No, Your Honor. It's the one category that triggers Section 112, at least if that's a category that causes cancer risk. I believe it's under both the cancer and non-cancer risk. That one category is enough to keep about one source is enough to keep the category.
Well, I was trying to distinguish, though, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but if I had four different facilities and three of them had come into compliance and one had not, any additional regulation or standards that were set and requirements imposed by the agencies would affect only that one non-conforming plant because the others are in conformity.
I think that's right, Your Honor. They were already complying with MAC standards. The issuance mm-hmm. of MAC standards wouldn't change their status.
Yeah, all right. Do you want to save the rest of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Eric Kostetler for the United States. EPA has simply corrected a determination here that Congress expressly authorized the agency to make. In the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments, Congress instructed EPA not to regulate power plants under the Section 112 program unless such regulation was both appropriate and necessary, considering other Act provisions requiring controls on power plants that would reduce emissions. Here, EPA has reasonably determined, after extensive analysis and after notice and comment rulemaking, that it is not, in fact, either appropriate or necessary to regulate power plants under this particular statutory program.
What do you do with C9?
Your Honor, petitioner's position that C9 applies is misplaced both because it violates fundamental principles of statutory construction and fundamental principles of administrative law.
First, let's just start with the statutory construction.
First, they're incorrect because Congress in Section N1A has specifically set forth its intent with respect to power plants. It has established the conditions pursuant to which power plants are to be regulated under the section. Specifically, Congress has instructed power plants are not to be regulated unless such regulation is both appropriate and necessary.
Right, but then if it decides it's appropriate and necessary, it is to list it under 112C, which it did, correct?
No. N1A establishes the threshold conditions for any regulation of power plants. It might be helpful if I drew an analogy here.
No, but can we just follow up?
It's not required. If it concludes it's appropriate and necessary, it isn't required to list it under 112C?
Oh, sorry, I misunderstood your question. Yes, if it makes the finding,
it makes the finding of necessary and appropriate. It's then required, as you agree, to list it under 112C. And then C9 says the administrator may delete any source category. It doesn't say any source category except power plants. It says any source category from the list under this subsection, which is C, under which it just listed power plants.
Your Honor, I think an excellent analogy can be drawn here between the...
Don't. You can give me an analogy after you answer this question. Okay? Just explain to me, you started by saying it violates principles of statutory construction. So tell me what's wrong with the structure I just described, why that is not correct.
There's a more specific provision addressing power plants. That provision is N1A.
But N1A, you agree, requires that once an appropriate and necessary finding is made, that it be listed under 112C. 112C, right?
But if that appropriate and necessary finding is an error and is withdrawn, then the precondition for listing it has disappeared.
Well, that would be fine if the agency hadn't listed it. Then it seems to me the agency could withdraw it.
Well, that's where we get to the fundamental principle of administrative law, that an agency can correct a mistaken determination.
Well, that's unless Congress has directed otherwise, which is what petitioners say the role C9 plays in the statute.
Again, can I get to my analogy?
Now you can do your analogy.
Great. Take a look at the source category listing criteria at subsection C1, which is really similar in its expansiveness to C9. If you take a look at C1, you'll see it says that all sources, all major source categories have to be listed. It's very expansive. So if you just read that provision in isolation, you would say, well, power plants need to be listed. However, you wouldn't do that because there's a more specific provision, and petitioners concede this point, addressing power plants. That's subsection N1A. Everyone agrees that N1A trumps C1 for purposes of listing, even though C1 says that all major sources need to be listed. Well, the analysis is really no different when we're talking about the delisting criteria at C9.
Even if we accepted that, the problem is once you list, how do you get back to N1? Once you list under C, how does N1 come back into the delisting process when it's silent about delisting and there is a specific provision in the statute about delisting?
It's a fundamental administrative law principle that an agency can correct a mistake. And that's
let me ask you about mistake. As I understand it, let me be clear about this. EPA does not dispute that it lawfully listed power plants under C, does it? After the determination in December of 2000?
EPA believes that determination was made without foundation and is incorrect. EPA didn't attempt to review it under the standards this court would upon judicial review, but EPA looked back at that determination and concluded that EPA had failed to properly account for emission reductions that would be obtained by other requirements of the Act.
I understand, but I know your brief uses the word mistake, and then at other parts it uses the word you can revisit because N1 is a threshold determination. But my questions to Mr. Pugh about Congress requiring all of these preconditions before this necessary and appropriate determination is made, how does that figure into your analysis? In other words, this is not something that the administrator was authorized to do on a whim and a prayer, but only after considered study.
That's
including
correct.
The National Science Foundation study.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think it's important to recognize here that in the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments, Congress made a policy judgment to treat power plants differently than every other source category.
As to listing?
As to any regulation.
But where is that in N? That's what I am asking you about.
Subsection.
Because I thought you agreed with Judge Tatel that after the determination is made by the administrator as to necessary or appropriate, the statute requires the listing under C.
I'm not sure whether it requires listing or not. As a matter of fact, EPA did list here. However,
the word is shall.
You think there's some doubt about that?
Yeah.
It's a moot.
It says the administrator shall regulate power plants under this section if it finds it's appropriate and necessary. It says it shall regulate.
Whether power plants needed to go on the list or not for EPA to regulate under this section is not an issue presented, but in any event, EPA did list, as a practical matter, power plants when it made the December 2000 determination.
How would the administrator regulate it if the administrator didn't list it under 112C?
Well, it could presumably establish regulations without formally putting it on the list.
Yeah, see, if that's right, then the agency has an easy way to protect itself in the future from the problem of errors in the N1A study, because if it doesn't have to list them, then C9 doesn't apply and the agency can change its position. The problem I think you're facing isn't the N1A study, but the 112C listing, which C9 then requires, provides how it can be removed from the list.
I think that construction of the statute would totally frustrate Congress's intent. Congress has stated very explicitly that power plants are not to be regulated under this subsection, under this section, unless it is both appropriate and necessary to do so.
Right.
And
so once it's necessary and appropriate, which we've had that finding, it's been made, it's been listed under 112C, and you agree that issue, whether that was appropriate or not, it's not before us, right? It was listed.
Let me.
You claim, your argument is the error was in the N1A study, not the 112C listing.
Correct.
Okay, and so just explain to me, because I still don't get it, how once it's listed and you're not challenging the listing, why is it that the language in C9B, the administrator may delete any source category from the list under this subsection? Any source category that includes power plants from the list under this subsection, which are power plants because they've been listed.
A hypothetical here might sharpen why that construction of the statute would lead to absurd results. Suppose hypothetically EPA had never even conducted a study and had determined without any basis that it was appropriate and necessary to regulate and put it on the list.
Right.
And then completed the study, recognized it was completely wrong, and removed power plants. Under that scenario,
well,
it would be
it
absurd
be,
to say
it
that.
Wouldn't it then be easy to make the C9 finding?
The C9 findings are a completely different criteria than the N1A criteria.
No, but if it was completely wrong, if it wasn't a source of pollution, it would be easy to make the C9 finding, wouldn't it?
Again.
Or I guess another way to look at it is if you're right that they. Okay, so they don't do the N1A study. That's your hypothetical, right? They just go ahead and list it, and then they issue emission standards. I assume the emission standards would be struck down by this court.
Again, it's important to recognize
Wouldn't they?
Perhaps, yes.
Well,
but the N1A criteria.
Why perhaps?
The N1A criteria is completely different than
If the N1A study is not made and the agency simply lists it, emissions from lists power plants under 112C, and issues emission standards. Are you suggesting that those emission standards wouldn't be subject to challenge?
No, certainly they'd be.
Would they be blatantly unlawful?
Certainly they'd be subject to challenge. The point I'm making is that the N1A criteria requires EPA to look at other provisions of the Act and can determine what kind of reductions in emissions will be achieved by these other provisions before deciding whether to regulate power plants. The C9 criteria doesn't involve any inquiry into what other reductions you're achieving through other Act requirements. Mm-hmm. Congress recognized when it passed the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments that it was imposing a number of controls on this source category elsewhere in the Act.
If you're right, then Congress would have said the administrator may delete any SAS any source category, paren, other than power plants, close paren, from the list under this subsection. But it didn't say that. It said any.
Again, that's reading, that interpretation is essentially reading N1A out of the statute. Congress has a more specific.
Why? N1A is a precondition to a 112C listing.
It's a precondition to any regulation of power plants under this subsection.
Right. See, I mean, Congress not only required the administrator to study and do a report, Congress required that the administrator submit the report to Congress. Another check on the administrator acting without due deliberation and consideration. So it gets on the list. And N1 doesn't say anything about what happens thereafter.
Well, this court has long held that agencies have the power to reconsider decisions at a minimum within the time period for taking an appeal.
Do you agree that Congress can limit that power?
I don't think it did so here.
No, that wasn't my question.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Congress can limit an agency's power to reconsider its decision?
If it explicitly did so, but it didn't here.
But you agree that it could. So the question is whether C9 does that, right?
I would urge the court to look at the American Methyl case, which petitioners themselves rely upon, where the court said, we have long held that agencies have inherent power to correct their mistakes by reconsidering their decisions within the period available for taking an appeal. Here, EPA clearly did so. Indeed, industry interveners representing regulated utilities tried to challenge the December 2000 listing. That decision was dismissed as unripe.
And doesn't the agency have to answer Judge Tatel's question no? Because Congress in the 1990 amendments said the agency's had all these years to do things and it hasn't done things. So now we're taking over. And here are the rules. And essentially, the agency stuck with Congress's decision.
But
One of the briefs makes the point, it didn't leave a gap for the agency to fill. It said, be very careful about power plants. Do a study, file a report with us, because if you do decide that it's necessary or appropriate, then C9 kicks in, and C9 is not easy to surmount.
Look, clearly, if...
Why isn't that a statutory scheme within Congress's power to enact?
Clearly, Congress did not intend for EPA to regulate this source category where it was not both appropriate and necessary to do so. For purposes of the analysis, we presume EPA got the determination right that it's not appropriate
or
necessary.
Let me be clear. Isn't your basic argument that it's time for Congress to amend the statute? In other words, in 1990, there may have been frustration and concern, and the administrator acted in good faith following Congress's direction. But now the agency has decided that C9 presents too difficult a barrier to surmount, and because at least at the time of this rulemaking, the agency said, we're about to make some other regulations, put them into effect, and we think this is going to solve the problem. But isn't that a decision that Congress has to make, having made this determination with which the agency no longer agrees?
No, Congress expressly gave EPA the authority to make the determination whether it is appropriate or necessary to regulate power plants.
Yes,
EPA
but it
is
gave
simply
it to,
acting
it gave the administrator that power once. And you want to say, as I understand it, that the Congress said N1 is sort of a continuing review authority. From time to time, the agency can go back and make this threshold determination.
That is our position, but we are dealing here with the first initial determination, which EPA has corrected.
Yeah.
See, I think your argument would be right. Clearly, the agency has the authority to revisit its N1A study, its N1A conclusions, up until the point where it lists the source under 112C. That's what triggers C9. So it's not that the agency can't reconsider its necessary and appropriate necessary finding. At least this is the way I read the statute. It's that it can't do it once it's listed the source under C9. See, you keep focusing on N1A. We keep focusing on C9.
Well, your interpretation leads to crazy results. I mean, consider industry interveners.
It'll be the first time, but tell me why.
Industry interveners have challenged the December 2000 listing determination. This court dismissed that as unripe.
Right.
So clearly, the court has indicated that industry interveners can come back when and if emission standards are promulgated and obtain a decision that the listing appropriate and necessary determination was wrong and obtained vacature without any reference to C9.
Correct.
So surely EPA can provide the same relief this court could provide in advance of such litigation.
C9 doesn't limit this court. C9 doesn't limit the judicial review. C9 limits the agency.
The interpretation that you're proposing would frustrate the longstanding principle of administrative law that an agency can correct its mistake prior to an appeal.
You're right, unless C9 is a limitation on that authority. Let me ask you this. Suppose instead of what happened here, the agency had made its N1A finding, listed it under 112C, issued its emission standards. They had been challenged, survived legal challenge. And 10 years later, the agency decides its appropriate and necessary finding was flawed. Can they revoke the study at that time and the emission standards?
Well, yes. It's consistent with the Supreme Court State Farm decision and longstanding principles of administrative law. An agency can reverse a determination
so
it's been given authority to make.
C9, your position then is that C9 plays no role at all in power plant regulation. That's your point.
That is our position, but the court need not even reach that issue because we are, again, dealing with the initial determination prior to any appeal of that initial determination.
We need not reach what issue?
You don't even have to reach the issue of whether 20 years from now EPA could reverse the determination because we're dealing with a situation where EPA has acted to correct a mistake in listing power plants in the first place.
My point was that why would my 10 or 20 year hypothetical be any different than this case except for the passage of time? Once the 112C listing is made,
EPA has always reasonably interpreted its authority under the Act as allowing it to remove a source category from the list due to an error at the time of listing. We cited to a number of examples. These are in the preamble to the proposal.
I saw those. I mean, that simply may be that those were also unlawful actions by the agency. I mean, just because the agency did it before doesn't mean it's lawful now.
No, but...
Right?
I mean, if, you, again...
Don't you agree with that? I mean... Well, I assume C9 was in the statute at the time those were removed, right? So, it can't be that you're not suggesting that when we interpret C9, we should our interpretation of C9 should be influenced by the fact that how the agency interpreted it in the past.
I think this is consistent with past actions. That's all I was pointing out.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that N1A is a more specific provision with respect to power plants. Congress's intent with respect to power plants is specifically set forth in N1A. Why should a provision that deals with source categories generically be given more weight than a provision that deals with power plants specifically.
I'll try once more, and then we'll agree we don't agree. It's not N1A that's the problem for you. It's that N1A requires this 112C listing, which in turn triggers CNA. And I haven't yet heard from you an answer to that problem.
I think there's the most plausible reading of the statute is that Congress did not intend for EPA to regulate power plants where it was not appropriate or necessary to do so. The interpretation you're proposing would mean that EPA would be compelled to engage in unnecessary, inappropriate regulation of power plants right. due to an error at the time of the initial listing decision. Right. That makes no sense. That's an absurd, illogical result.
Well, I went through a hypothetical, and maybe you could respond to that, as to Congress may have imposed upon the agency what the agency views as make work, if I can put it that way, that you have to promulgate standards under 112 when you know full well that once you do, you're going to come into court and argue that the original determination was a mistake. But you can get that opportunity. Congress didn't bar you entirely, and there is a way, at least hypothetically, to stay the effective date if it's going to take longer than the statutory period to accomplish judicial review.
I think in Section 307D7B, EPA is limited in the amount of period it can stay a rule, but fundamentally, it makes no sense for EPA to be unable to correct an error prior to judicial review. If this court can vacate the finding without reference to the C9 factors, why can't EPA provide the same?
No, I understand. You say surely you say if the court can correct it, why can't the agency? And my point is Congress has given you a way to accomplish that, but it's not quite the way you want to accomplish it. In other words, Congress has spoken on this issue.
I don't believe it has. It certainly has not said anything expressly dealing with this precise situation. Just like C1, C9 is a provision that deals with source categories generically. Congress's intent with respect to power plants is in N1A. There's legislative history that supports the view that Congress was reluctant to necessarily regulate this source category in view of other requirements it was imposing on power plants elsewhere in the Act. C9 does not allow EPA to look at other requirements of the Act. Congress's specific intent with respect to power plants is in N1A.
So your basic argument then, contrary to my earlier question, is that because Congress limited the occasion when judicial review is possible, until that occasion arises, any determination made under N1 is essentially tentative.
Well, there's nothing unusual about that, and of course.
But I mean, is that your basic point?
It's not tentative, but
No. But that you're triggering your N1 analysis, or tying it, linking it to the restriction on judicial review.
I'm saying at a minimum, EPA has authority to reverse the determination prior to judicial review. Our position is it can reverse it later as well. But at a minimum, fundamental principles of administrative law say that an agency can correct a decision it has express authority to make prior to judicial review.
I assume that your argument here is that the initial determination was validly made. And I ask that because interveners at least make an argument that that initial determination was an invalidly promulgated rule, and so the listing under C1 was also invalid, and so then you don't have the C9 problem. But EPA has never made that argument. Why not?
Well, EPA has said that that finding was without foundation and a mistake. It hasn't purported to apply the standard that this court would apply if it were reviewing that determination when and if it became reviewable. But EPA certainly thinks the determination was wrong because EPA acknowledged that it hadn't considered all of the emission reductions that would be obtained elsewhere in the Act.
But you don't argue it was wrong because it wasn't published for notice and comment, right?
We don't make that argument, but industry interveners have made that argument, and it is true that...
What do you think of that argument?
Well, it is true. The agency hasn't taken a position on the argument, but it is true there was no notice and comment opportunity provided for the December 2000 determinations.
You're not arguing that that's one of the flaws that justifies the agency's action?
Well, it is certainly the case that no one had an opportunity to point to flaws in the reasoning, the rationale underlying that determination.
That's not the basis of your argument.
It's not the basis for argument. It's just a matter of fact. And this revised rule that is before you today was promulgated after extensive opportunity for comment and after extensive analysis. There's a much fuller record supporting the revision rule that's before you. I see that I'm out of time.
Any other point you would like to bring to the court's attention?
Well, I would like, again, just to sum, to say fundamental principle of statutory construction that specific terms prevail over general. It's a fundamental principle of administrative law that agencies can correct their mistakes. And to hold that EPA doesn't have discretion to reverse a flawed determination would trample both of those longstanding principles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for industry interveners.
Good morning. Lee Zeugen on behalf of the Utility Air Regulatory Group. What is being challenged in this proceeding is EPA's Section 112N rule that was promulgated in March of 2005. That is the only rulemaking regulatory determination that EPA has ever made under Section 112N. As you have questioned earlier, Section 112N clearly was Congress's attempt to create a unique statutory provision for dealing with power plants under Section 112.
But you agree that N1A requires a 112C listing?
No, I do not.
If it's appropriate and necessary,
I do not.
You don't?
The way I read Section 112N1A, the appropriate and necessary finding defines the level of regulation. If EPA makes a positive finding that regulation is appropriate and necessary, then based on the facts that it used for that determination, it can decide how far to go with regulation. The statute 112N1A does not say to regulate under 112C or 112D, which are the MAC provisions. It simply says regulate under this section.
I would interpret
that to mean that EPA could impose standards that are more stringent than MAC if the situation arose factually.
Right, those are the standards, but it says shall regulate power plants under this section.
That's correct. If you look at...
So you're suggesting that could be through some method other than a 112C listing?
That's correct.
Okay, but let's come back to that in a second.
Sure.
It was listed here, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. It was listed. So would you try then to explain to me why that doesn't trigger C9?
Because... Judge Tatel, it was not a final agency action. At the time that decision was made in December of 2000, my client challenged that decision in this court.
Right.
We were met with an argument that we couldn't challenge it at that point because it was really a two-part decision, that not only did EPA make an appropriate and necessary determination under Section 112N1A, but it also made a listing decision under 112C.
Right.
And therefore, EPA and others cited to Section 112E4 to say that you can't challenge a listing decision until the final rule has been promulgated.
Right, exactly.
Now, the problem is, in addition to making that E4 argument, EPA also represented to the court that its action was not final agency action.
Well, but from
and it said that parties could raise any kind of comments about either the 112N1A factual determination or
right.
the listing as part of an ongoing rulemaking that was going to take place.
Mm-hmm. Or as part of a challenge to the emission standards ultimately issued by the agency.
Correct? That's right.
So you're in a very, your clients are in a much different position than the agency. The agency feels trapped that it can't correct its own mistake, but you can challenge all of these alleged errors in a challenge to the emission standards if the necessary and appropriate and necessary finding is flawed. You can challenge that when you challenge the emission standards, or if the C-112C listing was flawed, you can challenge that, right?
I'm not sure, given the interpretation I think petitioners are giving to 112C9, that we would be allowed to challenge the 112N1A determination.
Let's assume they're wrong about that.
Okay.
And that we think, that this court thinks that all of the issues you're concerned about now, that is you as regulated parties as opposed to the agency. I mean, Congress clearly said you can't challenge them after the 112C listing, so I would assume that means you can challenge them when you challenge the emission standard. Doesn't that give you all the protection you need?
Not if 112C9 has any meaning, because what petitioners are arguing is that once a category is under 112C, the only way you can remove it is 112C9.
That's the only way.
But that's a different test.
That's the only way the agency can remove it.
Correct.
I'm asking you about this. C9 does not limit this court. If this court found that the necessary and appropriate finding that led to the C9 listing and the ultimate MAC standards were arbitrary and capricious, we would invalidate it under the statute.
That's correct. I believe this court could rely on the
correct.
Inadequacy of the initial
so
listing decision.
Your clients have no problem here. It's the agency that's stuck, not you. Right?
I guess the question, Your Honor, is why we need to go through a process that EPA now believes is wrong.
Point of view, the only question is, where do you challenge this? Do you challenge it now, or do you challenge it when the emission standards are issued? The emission standards are issued, you make all your arguments right there. Your clients are totally protected.
We were told, Your Honor, in 2001 that this was not final agency action. So if the December 2000 decision is not final.
That's why you can challenge it. That's why the 112C listing remains subject to challenge as part of the challenge to the emission standard.
That's true, but we also have a right to convince the agency that their initial decision was wrong, that their tentative decision, their non-final decision was wrong.
I don't see why you care. I mean, you can, from your client's point of view, you're totally protected. You could, if this necessary and appropriate finding is flawed, you'll be able to strike down the emission standards when they're issued, which is what you want, right?
I'm not sure we are in the same place, Your Honor, because, as I said earlier, we don't agree
that
112N1A.
You have to go to court to get it done.
That's correct.
You can't walk up to the EPA and knock on the door and ask them to do it.
That's right. If you have a MAC standard, and you have to go through a
MAC
standard.
You've got to challenge the.
I thought your point, though, was that you wanted to be able to challenge at both ends of the line. Clearly, you can't put all your eggs in the basket that you're going to win in the court.
Right. I mean, if we convince the agency that their original factual decision was wrong, that it wasn't appropriate and necessary to regulate, we shouldn't have to go through a regulatory proceeding that EPA at the end of the day is going to admit was factually, you know, baseless.
Okay, so then help me once again with C9, all right?
Sure.
This has been listed under 112C. C9 says the administrator may delete any source category from the list under this subsection, which is 112C.
I would argue that that applies if you have a valid final listing. Here you do not have a valid final listing.
It doesn't say that, though, does it? It says you can remove it. It doesn't say EPA may remove. It doesn't say EPA remove any source category from the list under this subcategory if the N1A finding was flawed. It doesn't say that. It has other standards.
I guess to interpret it That way, Your Honor, leads to what I consider to be a very impractical result, where a party has to go through a standard-setting process that the agency itself admits is wrong.
Maybe that's what Congress intended, and, you know, you should try to get Congress to fix it. But.
Well, I guess from the point of view of my client, you're in somewhat of a frustrating position, because in 2001 we came to this court and said that the N1A determination was wrong. And this court said, well, we can't consider it now because of the operation of
E4. Decision was wrong? I mean, Congress made it pretty clear you can't challenge it at that point.
I think the court could have considered the N1A issue separate from the 112C issue, and that's what we argued to the court back in 2001 when we responded to EPA's motion to dismiss. I know it's my time, way over time.
It's all right. We've had a lot of questions.
Basically, I guess the question before this court really is whether that the final rule that EPA issued in March of 2005 can be overridden by an earlier 2000 decision that didn't follow notice and comment rulemaking, that didn't consider factors required by Section 112N, including, you know, the requirements of other statutory provisions under the Clean Air Act, and without EPA ever quantifying how power plant emissions affect methyl mercury levels in fish. EPA solved all of those problems when it issued its final rule in March of 2005 and found at that point that it was no longer appropriate and necessary to regulate. Having reached that decision, the only logical course is to remove power plants from Section 112, because the factual and legal predicate for that listing no longer exists.
Of course, I'm not sure that's an accurate representation of all the findings that were made in December 2000. I mean, if you put the two analyses next to each other, they don't quite jibe.
I don't believe the 2000 listing decision was conducted through notice and comment rulemaking. I think EPA just
admitted it. No, I was talking about the substantive analysis.
It is clear to me that EPA never considered many regulatory programs in December of 2000. They didn't.
Well, they weren't in existence, and they weren't in existence at the time of this rulemaking either.
But one of the things that EPA was required to do under Section 112N1A was to anticipate what the programs are going to be imposed on the utility industry as part of the regulatory program.
Well, the administrator talked about alternative methods and strategies that were available. He talked about other provisions.
But the administrator also said that they couldn't quantify the linkage between power plant emissions and mercury levels in fish. Without that, I don't know how you make a reasoned decision as to regulation, whether regulation is appropriate or not.
All right. I think we have your argument.
All right.
Thank you very much. Counsel for petitioners.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to make a few points. First, I think there's a factual misunderstanding about whether there was an opportunity for notice and comment on the 2000 determination. EPA, the record makes clear that there was an opportunity. The 2000 determination itself refers to that opportunity, and indeed there was a solicitation of public comment on the determination.
But this isn't critical to your argument, right?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
I mean, even if there had been none, your argument would be the same, right?
I think that even if there weren't, that's right.
You don't want the petitioners or the agency subsequently, or the industry, to argue that you conceded this point during this case.
Thank you, Your Honor. The other point I wanted to make is that Congress knew how to exempt power plants from Section 112C provisions when it wanted to do so. Section 112C6 contains an express exemption for power plants. It generally requires EPA to assure that 90% of the emissions of certain extremely toxic pollutants like mercury are subject to standards, but then it says this shall not force EPA to regulate power plants. I think that Congress, this shows, first of all, that Congress was keenly aware of power plants, not only when it was promulgating 112 generally, but even in writing Section 112C specifically. If it had wanted to create a similar exemption for power plants in Section 112C9, it would have done so. The other point is, the agency's argument assumes that Congress could not possibly have wanted to set a different test for delisting than it set for the original listing decision. But the structure of the Act shows that Congress was entirely comfortable having different tests for listing and delisting. Section 112C9's delisting criteria are also different than the listing criteria in Section C1 and Section C3.
All right. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.
I guess we do this one, right?
Yes.